This is Briar Cloth, and I'm a sales agronomist for CHS Ag Services in Greenbush, Minnesota. And we're pleased to bring you this update from the Red River Farm Network. CHS Ag Services, providing solutions for your success.
Good morning. Tuesday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. I'm Randy Conan. We'll also hear reports from Sierra Doctor and Whitney Pittman. Weather slowed planting progress a little bit last week. USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says corn progress is at 65% across the country. Still, that's 6% ahead of the five-year average.
She had a sprawling storm that lasted much of the week, and that really slowed down field work across the Great Plains. And that did extend into the western Corn Belt. In those states, we still see some planting delays in the double digits for states like North Dakota. Just 5% of the corn planted by May 14th, five-year average 26%. Wisconsin, 33% planted, five-year average 45%.
Soybean planting also stalling a bit, but that does remain ahead of the five-year average as well.
Only 14% of the U.S. intended acreage planted during the week, but that does push the overall progress by May 14th to 49%. Illinois, 77% of the soybeans planted by May 14th, five-year average is just 45%. Even further ahead in Missouri at 62% planted, five-year average 24%.
USDA's weekly crop progress report says 30% of the corn nationwide has emerged, and 20% of the soybeans that have been planted have emerged nationwide. Spring wheat, 40% planted. That's up from 24% last week, 37% last year. Nationally, 13% of the spring wheat has emerged. The winter wheat crop condition, Kansas wheat crop rated 68 poor to very poor and 10% good to excellent. The average nationwide, 46% of the nation's winter wheat crop is rated poor to very poor, with 55% rated good to excellent. National Ag Statistics Service says 61% of Minnesota's corn has been planted, with 15% of the crop emerged. That's up from 38% last week. Five-year average is 58%. Emergence slightly behind the 17% average. Soybean planting, 30% complete in Minnesota, with emergence at 4%. 28% of Minnesota spring wheat has been seeded, with 3% of that crop emerged. North Dakota says the Ag Statistics Service says North Dakota says 20% of the spring wheat crop has been seeded. That's well behind the 46% average. 2% of the spring wheat has emerged, well behind 12% average. 5% of the corn, 9% of the canola, 60% of the sugar beets have been planted. North Dakota's winter wheat is rated 54% fair and 44% good to excellent. Only 9% of that winter wheat is jointed. That compares to the 28% average. In South Dakota, 49% of the corn has been planted. That's up from 26% last week. The five-year average is 41%. 8% of South Dakota's corn has emerged. Soybean planting at 29%. That's up 10% from last week. 5% is the five-year, or the five-year average is 22%. 1% of the soybeans have emerged. South Dakota's spring wheat crop, 84% planted. That's ahead of the 78% average. South Dakota's winter wheat rated 57% fair, 23% good to excellent. University of Minnesota Extension corn agronomist Jeff Coulter says temperatures are conducive for emergence right now.
Oh, yeah, this is great conditions for corn planting and emergence, these temperatures. Corn should be emerging about 10 to 12 days after planting. So this is about ideal.
Coulter says in another week or so, farmers should think about switching hybrids.
Yeah, once we get to May 22, then it's a good thing to think about switching to hybrids that are 5 to 7 relative maturity units earlier than what is considered full season for your area.
Farmers near Halstead, Minnesota, Rachel Arneson says they have missed a lot of the rain, and they're a little bit ahead on the sugar beets right now.
We have 90% of our beets in, which, you know, I feel like we're slightly ahead of the curve, but we're going to have to wait another day or two to get the last of them in. Overall, things are, especially in the Halstead area, it's been very dry. But, you know, the tree lines and some big ditch bottoms, it's just all that snow that we had, it's been slow draining out. Most of the field is good to go. It's just these tree lines and pockets here and there that are kind of holding things up, like, you know, with temperamental beets and everything. But we're still trucking along. We keep missing these major rains that keep, I think, going south of us.
You're listening to the Red River Farm Network. Tuesday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. According to a spokesperson with the United Nations, intensive discussions are underway to salvage the Black Sea grain deal. The agreement makes it possible for grain and fertilizer to move through the Black Sea. That is scheduled to expire Thursday. Ukraine, Russia, Turkey, and the United Nations are reportedly meeting ahead of that deadline. Russia threatening to leave the deal unless concessions are made on fertilizer shipments and financial policies. Tying work requirements to food stamps benefits in negotiations over the debt ceiling is a non-starter for Senate Ag Committee Chair Debbie Stabenow. In an interview with Reuters News Service, Stabenow said food assistance programs should be addressed in the farm bill, not the debt ceiling negotiations. The Michigan lawmaker also said default would be devastating to farmers. New legislation was introduced yesterday that would recognize the progress that corn ethanol has made. Red River Farm Network farm broadcaster Sierra Doctor has that story.
New legislation would require that the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency use a more modern and accurate model to assess the carbon reductions from biofuels under the Renewable Fuel Standard. National Corn Growers Director of Public Policy Kathy Bergeron says removing this provision would allow corn ethanol to be categorized as an advanced biofuel.
NCGA is supporting some new legislation that was introduced in the House of Representatives today. This legislation is sponsored by Congresswoman Miller Meeks from Iowa. And this legislation would update the renewable fuel standard that removes, I guess we could say it's an outdated provision in the RFS that specifically would prevent, you know, currently prevents corn ethanol from being classified as an advanced biofuel. And so this legislation really kind of recognizes that that the carbon intensity of corn ethanol has come down since the RFS was enacted.
Bergeron says this legislation recognizes the leaps and bounds that corn ethanol has taken to improve its carbon footprint.
You know, I think what it does here is, you know, I think one, right, does sort of recognize that progress that, you know, today's ethanol is different from where ethanol was when the RFS was established. Under the RFS, to be classified as an advanced biofuel, that fuel must be at least 50% fewer GHG emissions than gasoline. And, you know, at the time that the RFS was enacted, that wasn't the case. Today, you know, that average for ethanol is between 44 and 52% lower in carbon emissions than the gasoline that it replaces.
Reporting Agriculture's Business, I'm Sierra Doctor on the Red River Farm Network.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack announcing the largest investment in rural electrification since the 1930s under the Inflation Reduction Act. Red River Farm Network farm broadcaster Whitney Pittman has that story.
Clean energy funding will be made available in two programs for clean energy in rural America. A total of $10.7 billion will be awarded. Secretary Vilsack says the first program will be available to co-ops and companies for clean energy projects that will create jobs and lower costs for rural Americans.
The first program, there is $1 billion being placed in the Powering Affordable Clean Energy Program, or PACE. PACE provides loans, a portion of which can be forgiven, in connection with the development of renewable energy projects or energy storage. Broad range of eligible entities who can apply for these forgivable loans, including corporations, municipalities, co-ops, tribes, LLCs, Alaska Native Corporation.
The remaining $9.7 billion will be used for rural electric co-ops.
The Rural Utility Service will also be investing $9.7 billion from the Inflation Reduction Act through a mix of loans, grants, and loan modifications to support the purchase or ownership of renewable energy systems, zero emission systems, and carbon capture systems. But this program is exclusively for rural electric cooperatives. We are going to refer to this program as the New Empowering Rural America Program, or New ERA.
Reporting Agriculture's Business, I'm Whitney Pittman on the Red River Farm Network.
You're listening to the Red River Farm Network. Good morning. Welcome to Inside Agriculture on the Red River Farm Network. There's been some question as to whether or not farmers could use wheat seed from Ergody lots that would work. NDSU Extension plant pathologist Andrew Friskop says North Dakota wheat growers could use the Ergody wheat seed as a seed source without worrying about ergot breakouts due to the production practices that we have in the state.
Yeah, over the last couple of years, we've definitely had some issues with ergot and ergoty seed lots out there. And one of the common questions I'll get is, can I use this as a source of seed? And if you would read any type of book in the literature, it would say absolutely not, do not use it. But I just think that we're in a different situation in North Dakota where we can use an ergoty seed lot and it will still have low risk for contributing to ergot problems we have in the state. And most of that is we have over 59 grass hosts in the state, so there's always inoculum. And the other primary reason is when we're planting wheat, we're planting it at depths where the mushrooms that grow from ergot can't get above the soil surface. So I just think it's a pretty low risk.
And Friskop says the higher ergot body can dock the seed.
When we think about an ergoty seed lot, the primary reason why it's being docked is it has more ergot body by weight in a healthy seed lot that is needed for sell. So put this in example, ergoty grain for wheat is somewhere like 5 to 10 ergot bodies in the 2 pounds of seed. So the idea is that it just contains some of the pathogen, but it's not a whole lot. So if we think about it, how much it will impact yield or anything along that measures, it's going to probably have minimal effect because the majority of the seed is going to be healthy wheat kernels. The only impacted kernels, if we want to think about, is the ones that are the pathogen itself. So it's not going to have any germination issues.
Checking markets before we leave you this morning, we're seeing July wheat Minneapolis trading 0.75 cents higher at 874. September Minneapolis wheat's up 1¾ cents at 876¾. Chicago July wheat is down 3 cents at 657¾. Kansas City July wheat down 5¼ at 893. July corn's down 4½ at 588. December corn down 2 at 513. July soybeans down 11¼ at 1389½. November soybeans down 7½ at 1223¾. On the farm calendar this morning, the North Dakota Department of Agriculture's APUC, Agriculture Products Utilization Commission, will meet 9 a.m. on Thursday. That will be in Dickinson at the Astoria Hotel. Also coming up, the NDSU Animal Science is hosting its Beef Field Day, May 24th. That'll be at the NDSU Beef Cattle Research Complex and the NDSU Beef Unit. U.S. Meat Export Federation also will have its annual spring conference in Minneapolis. That begins May 24th, runs out through the 26th. Well, thanks for joining us this morning. Have a great Tuesday. This is the Red River Farm Network.